Rock AM 1130, 103.5 FM, also on the iHeart Radio app. Justice and Drew, along with Sam, going to get to our guest, Andrew Langer, president of the Institute for Liberty. Real quick, Avengers Infinity War, it toppled The Force Awakens for the best box office opening ever. $250 million at the box office over the weekend, edging past The Force Awakens to set the highest opening weekend of all time. I actually heard somebody... I didn't even respond because it was so ludicrous. I heard somebody make the comment that, yeah, if The Last Jedi hadn't sucked, that wouldn't have happened.
What?
That doesn't even...
How does that have effect?
I cannot commute.
That was the mental gymnastics on that one. So more people went to go see Avengers Infinity War because of their frustration over The Last Jedi in order for it to make more money than The Force Awakens.
Okay. Okay. All right. Oh, sure.
I'm done.
I'll let you leave
that.
That
wasn't me.
I know.
That was stupid people.
I know. Bottom line is they're both owned by Disney.
Yeah. Right.
You know, you Last Jedi, Force Awakens, Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's all going to Disney.
Yeah, Disney's going to own everything soon. They're buying 20th Century Fox. I'm oddly okay with that.
I, for one, welcome our Disney, Google, Amazon overlords.
Absolutely.
But at some point, we're all going to be working for one of those.
I want a theme park in every state.
That's a terrible idea.
That's a fantastic idea. That's a terrible idea. It's a great idea.
What are they going to do in Montana?
Why should make them smaller? What are they going to do in Montana?
A theme park in Montana?
Put one in Yellowstone.
That'll go over really well. Turn Yellowstone into a big old theme park. Andrew Langer, Institute for Liberty, our D.C. correspondent. This segment of Justice and Drew powered by our friends from over at Randy's Electric. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, gentlemen. Listen, my favorite take so far on Avengers Infinity War. Have you guys seen this review by the newly reviewed from the New Yorker?
No.
Oh.
So he gives, I love New Yorker reviews. They're so pretentious.
That's exactly it. He gives Infinity War 2.5 stars because, well, you walk in and there's no explanation of the characters, and the characters don't change within the framework that, that Marvel has set out for them in the previous 10 years. It's like... Wait, what?
Wow.
Like this, I mean, it was like this. I mean, complete. You know, you never want the guy whose main inspiration for film review is Francois Truffaut to be reviewing Avengers: Infinity War. I mean, it is emblematic of everything that is wrong with East Coast media. Between that and the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I think we've reached a peak elitism.
I love New Yorker reviews. They're really the most entertaining reviews. They're terrible, and they are incredibly pretentious. I was actually going to do this on the show a couple weeks ago and never got around to it. But I don't know if you saw A Quiet Place, Andrew. But when
I've not. When the
New Yorker reviewed A Quiet Place, which was a fantastic movie, the review was all about how the real villain in the movie is white supremacy.
Because the story. I believe I saw tweets about that.
Yeah, the story was about this white family overcoming all of these dark monsters that were coming after him, and it was just like the racial overtones in this movie just cannot be ignored. It was horrible and awful and hilarious.
Or it's not. All right. Those things.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, never send a guy whose most recent film reviews are about silent movie to go and review the latest blockbuster film. It just doesn't work that way.
You know, it is with the White House Correspondents' Dinner. We've been talking about this quite a bit this morning. But you can kind of put it into in a weird way, and I'll try to make the connection here. This world that we live in right now, that we continue to try to navigate better and get used to navigating, is this one filled with all these instant opinions. And so even Infinity War now, you know, that movie in and of itself is garnering a lot of controversy. And I think that's solely because people have the ability to take to social media and to throw their opinions out there, and immediately creates these divides. And the same thing can ring true for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. You know, the news about this event can spread quickly. The audio and the video can spread quickly. And people can immediately start in on their takes of these events and give it a lot more coverage than they normally get or should get.
You know, it's funny because I talk about this, the concept of the the 24-second news cycle, right? It used to be 24-hour news cycle. Not quite literally, John, to your point, it rockets across. And it's funny because I went back and last night I was sort of waiting for folks to finish up. I watched the Friars Club roast of Jerry Stiller. I remember when Comedy Central didn't just do roast, but they actually used to broadcast the Friars Club roast. The uninitiated, the Friars Club is like the fraternity of comedians. And I sat and I watched it, and I then went back and watched Michelle Wolf's piece. And it just wasn't funny. It wasn't clever in any way, shape, or form. And you go and you watch, you know, listen, Susie Essman, who at the time was a complete, virtually unknown comedian, then went on to do great things on
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. You know, she was brilliant. She was crude, but she was absolutely brilliantly funny in this. You know, just a spot on wit. And yet, you know, this is how far we've come. Johnny Carson used to have a joke about sort of it's like evolution in reverse. And that's exactly what we've seen.
You know, and I wonder when and if it changes, or if this is just the new reality that we're going to have to live in, because nothing really sticks. You're right. That 24-second news cycle. We had a story, or Sam had a story in her top five of this you know, pro gun rally that took place on the Capitol steps over the weekend. And in it, there was some individuals interviewed talking about how they wanted to present another voice other than some of the students that were coming out as anti-gun from Parkland. And in the middle of when she was reading it, I didn't say it out loud, but the thought that crossed into my head was, well, you know what? Those voices already are kind of irrelevant. We've already kind of moved on past the David Hoggs and certainly the Emma Gonzalez's. I mean, they're not dominating the mainstream media anymore. So
David Hogg had to grab headlines last week because he's apparently going to prom with Cameron Kasky, one of the other male Parkland survivor activists. I mean, that's sort of where we've come. And you know, I think that's exactly it, right? There's the upside. The downside to the 24-second news cycle is it requires this immediate reaction. You have to hold fast to that reaction. You can't have time to process it. I will say the upside is that it does hasten the life cycle of some of these other stories. Like, you know, last week I talked about this on my own show on Saturday. You know, the Jim Comey book is you know, that's ancient news already. You know, you just finished 5 days ago doing this, the old news cycle. No, nobody's going to care about James Comey in another 3 days at all.
Let's move over to, and speaking of that, sort of stuff getting buried, the whole situation with North Korea, and we were, again, this is something that we were covering in the top five, and this possibility that if we pledge to not invade, you know, they will denuclearize, which we both were like, yeah, sure, we won't invade. Yeah, go ahead. Go for it. But this is getting buried. I mean, this gets buried under the weight of the White House Correspondents' Dinner when we are potentially in the middle of a very, very historic time with this event.
Well, you know something, listen, the summit's going to happen. This is a story that's not going to go away only because there are things that are absolutely going to happen that are going to make world headlines. I mean, listen, the three of us, you, me, and Drew, we know that there's no possible way the president's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize and all this. And he should. And then maybe shared with Moon and even shared with Kim Jong-un, maybe. But certainly the president should get a great deal of credit for this, and he won't. But it's going to be very hard to ignore this. And it's going to be very hard to ignore this, A, the summit, B, if the peace process actually happens, C, if normalization, and by that I mean transiting from South Korea back to the north, because that's really where the flow is going to go. It's going to go south to north as opposed to the way it did in Germany, where it went from east to west. And then, of course, if U.S. troops wind up, if we wind up substantially drawing down our forces on the Korean Peninsula, you know, all of those things are going to be stories that will be hard to ignore. And you know, but I don't think they can be. I just don't think they can be.
obviously, the North Korean regime hasn't been a regime that you can take at face value. You can trust their word on these sort of things. They've got a history of lying. They've got a history of being duplicitous and going back on agreements and things like that. However, I don't know. It feels to me like a corner has been turned. You know, in all of those times in the past, you didn't have North Korean leaders traveling outside the country, recently with the China, across the border into South Korea, having handshakes and photo ops with South Korean presidents, declaring an end to the Korean conflict, the decades-old Korean conflict. Do you feel like a corner has been turned, or is this just more of the same propaganda game that we've come to expect from North Korea?
It's definitely not more propaganda games. So I was going to bring this up. So you all know I met James Pryor over the weekend at a political science event. I shouldn't say this. One of my great mentors retired from William & Mary this summer or is retiring now. And they did a big party, and Jacob Pryor apparently was a fellow student at William & Mary. I didn't realize this. At the event, I was talking to one of my old international relations professors, and I posited this theory to IM, and I said, look, I suspect that a deal has been cut where Kim Jong-un can recede some power, maintain some semblance of his lifestyle, at least in the near term, but he can sort of fade into his own obscurity. And this professor, you know, knows from whence he speaks, agrees that this is entirely a major possibility here. That Kim's great interest is in self-preservation, and not just self-preservation, but also preservation of his lifestyle. You know, he wants to be able to still play basketball with Dennis Rodman if he gets a chance. And so my suspicion is that someone made it very clear to him that if he didn't fade, then he would be removed from power at some point in time. And this is why he is being so amenable in all of this, is that there is some deal that's been cut.
Well, I wonder if, and this is just based off of, you know, conversations that we've had with you and others and experts on the show. You know, I wonder how much of what we're seeing play out in with North Korea has more to do with time than necessarily President Trump. Not that I want to take any credit away from President Donald Trump. I think that he's handled it very well, and he's shown some strong leadership that may have pushed this along. But, you know, you look at the difficulties and what we've learned about just in the past year about North Korea, you know, it's unsustainable, the path that they were on. And I'm wondering if what we're seeing now, it just happens to be timing, that unsustainability has reached a tipping point when it comes to North Korea, right, at a time when there's a president in the White House who is not going to sit back idly by and just take the threats casually, right, that's pushed him into this position.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, the way it used to work, the paradigm used to be that North Koreans would get hungry, Kim would see the writing on the wall, whichever Kim it was, and they would sort of rattle sabers, very similar to the plot of Austin Powers or a really bad, you know, spy movie, you know, hold the world hostage for nuclear weapons, and U.S. and others would kowtow to it. But you got Donald Trump. He is fundamentally disrupting the way the U.S. conducts its foreign policy, setting a complete new paradigm for all of this, and you know, one of it being this idea of always being able to walk away or always being willing to walk away from the negotiating table. And when you do it and you put it in those terms, it changes the conversation that happens. Yeah, he's not going to suffer this foolish fat man, the rocket man, gladly. And you know, essentially it sets it up so that South Korea and China can go to Kim and say, hey, we don't know what this crazy man is going to do. So maybe you better buck up and start dealing. Otherwise, who the heck knows? And then Donald Trump ups the ante by changing our missile defense posture in Korea, somewhat over the objections of a lot of folks in South Korea. But you know, we're trying to protect our own interests, so we put in our mid-range nuclear missile interceptors. And it changes the dynamic in a very fundamental fashion.
You know, as a sidebar to this whole thing, maybe you know, history will do this job. But I personally, I feel like it's so unfortunate that the conversation around this president is focus solely on what it is, like stuff like the White House Correspondents' Dinner and people responding to him, because it really, to me, would be so much more interesting. It might be boring. It may not make for great ratings on mainstream media, but to look at the actions of this particular president compared to previous presidents, how he goes and handles things and the effect that it's had, that to me is a very, very interesting story, worthy of a lot of different conversations that we just don't simply have because it's Donald Trump. And you can't say that name without having it elicit an emotional response in every single person that hears it.
But see, this is where it dovetails back to the problem with the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which, you know, is yes, it's a parochial story, but on the other hand, it shows you that we have a media that should be doing the job of reporting a really interesting story of, you know, what's happening in this world. But they had this visceral reaction to this president, and so therefore they're not going to report it in any way that the public has served. Now, I will say the upside to all of this is, and I've maintained this since the beginning of the administration, you know, the more the media wants to focus on the frippery and less on the substance, you know, the more that can actually get accomplished. I mean, Small Business Week started yesterday. And that's an event that's done by the Small Business Administration, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And so much has been done for small businesses in the last year and a half. It just can't be done. It's been a sea change. Small business optimism is at its second highest level ever.
Wow.
And that is all due to the efforts by this administration in changing the posture vis-a-vis American enterprises. And that's, that, you know, yes, I would love the media to be shouting to the high heavens over this, but on the other hand, I really would rather have the substance done. And even if those aren't reported, I'm okay with that so long as it all gets done.
Well, and there are some outlets that are doing that are doing that work that we're talking about. It just doesn't get reported. It just doesn't get coverage. Yeah. You know, instead we get wall to wall, you know, White House Correspondents' Dinner nonsense. It's just not, and not that that's anything different than the past decade. You know, I just it is there is some really, really fascinating things happening with this presidency, and it
gets caught up in the in the politics of personality.
Yeah.
It's all about his personality and not about what's actually happening with this administration, which is, you know, there's some rather stunning and historic stuff going on with this presidency, and none of that's getting the coverage that it would get if it was anybody other than Donald Trump in the office. Andrew Langer, our DC correspondent, Institute for Liberty, thank you for joining us. Always enjoy our Monday chats. Look forward to catching up with you next week.
Talk to you later, guys.
And thank you to Randy's Electric for sponsoring this segment of Justice and Drew.
Coming up, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. They published a report on Russia collusion, finding there was no Trump-Russia collusion.
Oh.
And by the way, this was an incredibly lengthy, detailed report that we'll give you details on. Plus, we will give you that update on the caravan that made its way up from Central America.
And the president's up, and he's tweeting.
Ooh.
Justice in.
Graced with Sarah's presence tonight. I have to say, I'm a little starstruck. I love you as Aunt Lydia in The Handmaid's Tale. Mike Pence, if you haven't seen it, you would love it. Every time Sarah steps up to the podium, I get excited because I'm not really sure what we're gonna get. You know, a press briefing, a bunch of lies, or divided into softball teams. It's shirts and skins, and this time don't be such a little bitch, Jim Acosta.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130. Talking about that disaster that was the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Dom in Maple Grove's got a comment. Good morning, Dom.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. You know, I got to take issue with your comment that journalists pretend like celebrating the First Amendment doesn't matter. But, you know, journalists do matter. But maybe in Cuba, in Russia, in China, maybe not in Washington, D.C., but think Pussy Riot, the Russian punk rock group, think coverage of Edward Snowden or the Sanchez guy who started a dissident movement. You know, but the stark contrast that I saw at the dinner was Michelle Wolf, what I think that's the name of the comedian, with her foul mouth, and Sarah Sanders with her voice. That sealed my vote for Trump Pence. That's all. That's all it took, at least for me.
Was it in question, Dom? Did you go into the dinner going, I don't know.
I might vote for his opponent
depending on how the comedian does.
I'm not 100% sure.
No, because I do enjoy it. You know, like I've been to Las Vegas many times. My wife and I have been in the front row, being made fun of, and all kinds of stuff. We made racial jokes, level fun of. But it didn't bother me. But I think this has taken this thing to a whole new level. And I think there's a lot of people like me that are saying, okay, thank you very much, Michelle Wolf. You just sealed it for us. That's what I think is going to go. But especially when Paul Ryan, they play this guy, Paul Ryan, congratulating the scholarship winners and raises beer bottle to toast them. I think the MC was Margaret somebody. To allow some. She said she was from Bulgaria. She said, Speaker Ryan, don't forget your mandatory drug test. So one after the other, and he said, okay, thank you guys for having this dinner. You spoke for the rest of us.
Thanks for your call, Tom. Appreciate it.
A lot of words.
At the beginning of his call, he mentioned, the fact that journalism is important. And yes, there are great journalists out there that are doing really important work, that are exposing things that need to be exposed. But that's not what was being celebrated Saturday night.
No.
What was being celebrated Saturday night was the cocktail party, White House correspondents, little click club of how great they are. And though that breed of journalist that sort of gets to that level and gets and starts going to those types of events, they're not the ones out there that are, quote, speaking truth to power.
Right, right. Look, the whole Michelle Wolf thing. Right. She could have been smart, could have been a well-crafted set of jokes to poke fun at all sides, right, and make everybody laugh. And there was some of that in there, but it's very indicative of the majority of the mainstream media. They do the same thing. They have some legitimate news items in there, and they cover some legitimate things, but then that genuine frustration and hate for this presidency begins to seep out, and it just turns ugly. And that's exactly what happened over the weekend. There was a tweet, Olivia Nunzi, we were talking about this during the break, tweeted this: the debate over Michelle Wolf is stupid and boring, and everyone is playing their role predictably. I'm going to burn my birth certificate and Social Security card in a bonfire and walk into the forest to live out the rest of my days in solitude. Maybe I'll get eaten by a bear.
That's funny.
It is it is funny. And look, she's right. It is playing out predictably. That stand-up routine played out predictably. Right. If you had polled the audience of what the expectation was that was going to come from this comedian, even if you never heard a routine before, I would have guessed it was going to be that.
Yeah, and for people out there that are kind of coming at us on Twitter, it's like, I'm not offended by Michelle Wolf. I'm not upset.
No.
I'm not angry.
No.
At best, it elicited an eye roll from me. Because it was. It was exactly what if you'd asked me what I would have expected to happen at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, what Michelle Wolf did fit it to a T.
Yeah.
I mean, she played out her script perfectly, and it was boring, and it wasn't funny. I wasn't offended. I'm not crying. I'm not upset. I'm just bored.
Right.
Just an eye roll with the whole thing.
I thought it was ugly, and I also find most straight-up horror films ugly.
Right.
I don't go and watch them because I don't find enjoyment in them, but I also understand that there are people that really, really like them. But I don't get offended by a horror film.
No.
No, I wasn't offended by that. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was trite, predictable.
It wasn't that funny.
Yeah, and
there was one joke, and I don't even remember what it is, and I'm not going to go watch the whole thing again to find it. There was one joke that it was early on that legitimately made me laugh, and that was when I found myself thinking, I wonder what everybody's so bothered by. So far, this isn't bad. It isn't funny. And then it turned, and then it got really boring and ugly.
And in my opinion, this is again my opinion. For Michelle Wolf, what a great opportunity to showcase what you do as a comedic talent. But instead, you didn't.
Maybe that is what she does.
Well, if that is what she does, then she's obviously going to get a lot of viewers based off of that to her Netflix special.
Yeah.
But at the same time, she's only going to reach the largest audience that she is capable of reaching, because there are plenty of people out there like myself that won't even bother to give a time of day based off that performance over the weekend.
The president has been up and has predictably been tweeting about this.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
He always tweets.
What now?
Oh, shit.
15 minutes ago, the President of the United States tweeted, "The White House Correspondents' Dinner is dead as we know it. This was a total disaster and an embarrassment to our great country and all that it stands for. Fake news is alive and well and beautifully represented on Saturday night."
All right. Trump, stop.
Yeah, just move on.
It's not necessary. I know that he's appealing to the base, but that, like the first one...
He's not going to not comment.
Oh, of course not. Yeah. Well, he already did. You know, the first one coming out sort of in support of Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I'm cool with that. I'm good. You know? I'm fine with that, but doubling down,
yeah.
You know, Trump, let it go. Let it go, dude. Enough people are trashing it. You don't need to chime in anymore.
7 minutes ago, the president tweeted, "Numerous countries are being considered for the meeting." Put "meeting" in all caps.
Oh, okay. I forget we're doing that now.
But would Peace House, Freedom House on the border of North and South Korea be a more representative, important, and lasting site than a third-party country? Just asking. So basically what he's saying is they're looking for a neutral location to have the summit, you know,
okay,
with North Korea. Numerous countries are being considered, but he's saying that the Peace House, Freedom House that's on the border might be more important. And then he's apparently asking Twitter's opinion, which is a terrible idea, Mr. President. You don't want Twitter.
No.
You don't need their input on this.
No.
No.
No. They should have it in Omaha. Just benign. Just Omaha, Nebraska. Just do it there.
Do it in Montana.
Neutral. Yeah, just a neutral location.
Yeah.
You know, just you know, do it in the People's Republic of Chad.
They could use the attention.
Have it there.
It's like, you know, it's like the getting the Super Bowl. It profiles your city.
Oh, that's right.
You know, it's a good chance to showcase.
This is where the peace accord things took place.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. Yeah,
the People's Republic of Chad could use that.
Absolutely.
What if the People's Republic of Chad isn't actually real?
No, it is.
It's just a made up place.
I planned to visit. I went to their board of tourism over the weekend. Looks like a lovely place.
I don't know. Every time I type it in there, I get an emoji flag. So I figure it's gotta be real. You don't get the emoji flag if you're not real, right?
They hang everything on that emoji flag in the People's Republic of Chad, by the way. That is their claim to fame. We've got a flag. 651-989-5855. All right, we'll get to the things that we promoted the last time. That is the caravan update. Also, this House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence publishing this report on Russia collusion. It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice in...
So have you ever wondered what we do here on Twin Cities News Talk with Justice and Drew along with Sam during the break?
We've learned a lot about Chad.
We learned a lot about Chad. For example, Sam, I went to the TripAdvisor for the Best of Chad. And
yeah.
the first photo they show for the Best of Chad on TripAdvisor, it's a picture of a bunch of camels drinking from a dirty pond.
They have camels there? You literally could have told me that there was like camels or like penguins. Like I have no idea where Chad is. What's in Chad?
It's apparently a horrible. It's like a horrible place.
It's even Wikipedia. Like they don't even bother to go edit their own Wikipedia because Wikipedia says Chad is one of the most poorest and corrupt countries in the world. It's listed as a failed state, and even people in chat are like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we suck.
You know that you can go edit that, right? Anybody can go edit that.
Wow.
You can just change the article. Chad is great. Come see our camels.
Do some Chad outreach. Yeah. Anyway, all right, back to more relevant items. We had something else that popped up during the break, too. Can you play a brief clip from the White House Correspondents' Dinner of comedian Michelle Wolf?
I actually really like Sarah. I think she's very resourceful. Like, she burns facts, and then she uses that ash to create a perfect smoky eye. Like, maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's lies.
Like, so somebody tweeted at us. You guys are crying about smoky eye when you enlisted off a bunch of offensive things the president has said.
Which were offensive.
Crying about it. I just didn't think it was funny. And part of it is I didn't really get it. Like, I assume it's a joke about makeup.
Yeah, so I got it. And I was like, that joke had, like, the potential to actually be something. But then when she just kind of followed up with, like, lies, it just kind of fell apart.
What is smoky eye?
So smoky eye, you know, like when you look at Sarah Huckabee Sanders and she's got like that darker, smudgy eyeshadow.
Okay,
that's smoky eye. It's considered kind of like glamorous, so you'll see.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so it's an intentional look.
Yeah, so it's it's like a darker eyeshadow that's kind of smudged and it looks kind of smoky. And so if you look at like movie stars, actresses, and stuff on the red carpet, and they have like that dark eyeshadow.
Sure.
That's smoky eye.
Oh, awesome. So I've got like permanent smoky eye with the dark bags under my eyes.
That's why I don't sleep.
Not on the bottom.
Oh, does it count on the bottom?
No, you want to cover that up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, John, we've been meaning to say something for a while.
I had a years. I should post one of these. There was a cartoonist that listened to the show years ago, and he did this superhero rendering of me, like in a Superman. It's pretty funny. Superman outfit, but it's funny. He was very keen to put the dark bags under the eyes of the character. It made it really, it made it look like me, because I've got dark bags under my eyes. So you're saying that's not, okay. I should put some makeup on underneath that. Those clips, by the way, of Michelle Wolf, there's a little teeny tiny part of me that feels a little bad, because it's clear that she was not comfortable at all. The way that her jokes kind of trailed off owning the finishes.
No, well, the crowd wasn't owning the finishes. Yeah. When you hear the reaction to these jokes, I mean, the last few jokes that I at least heard that she gave, you can hear the crowd just kind of like, oh.
Yeah, it was just uncomfortable, ugly and uncomfortable. Out of the Hill, the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, okay? This is, by the way, this report, okay, on Russia collusion, 240 pages, took more than a year to write, 70 witnesses interviewed and 300,000 documents reviewed, and almost two dozen congressional subpoenas.
Right. And there are people that are going to dismiss this immediately upon hearing it's the House Permanent Select Committee by saying, well, clearly this is a partisan report. This isn't an independent investigation. This isn't anything coming from the special prosecutor or special investigator or anything like that. They're going to dismiss it immediately as being partisan, but keep in mind what you just said. I want to reiterate, 300,000 documents reviewed, 70 witnesses interviewed, more than a year to write, two dozen congressional subpoenas issued. This is not just some partisan memo that they put out.
And what they talk about in here, they publish this report on Russia collusion, or more accurately, according to The Hill, right, Russian active measures, a phrase associated with subversive methods used by the former Soviet Union to undermine Western democracies. And that's what's important here. Mm-hmm. The essential takeaways from this: Russia has been undermining Western democracies with active measures such as propaganda and disinformation for a very long time. There was no Trump-Russia collusion, but Putin achieved his goal. And therein lies the difference.
Yes.
And that's where the conversation should be, right? It says at the same time, Russia used cyber measures to target American information systems. Individuals and organizations were targeted. Thankfully, none of them were vote tallying or data recording systems used in our elections were compromised. With regards to the prime accusation, the committee found no evidence that the Trump campaign colluded, coordinated, or conspired with the Russian government. And the
And credits.
Right, yeah, and credits.
And credits.
But the unfortunate part of this is there is a real issue here, and it's an issue that we've been discussing for the past year. We've talked about it with individuals like David Gartenstein-Ross and our D.C. correspondent Andrew Langer, and that is we should be all united together as a country and as citizens against what Russia has been doing. But unfortunately, it's been so focused on this Russia collusion that it can't take place, and it probably never will take place. I don't think there ever will be any coalescing around the idea that we should all be mad at Russia because of that unfortunate line of thinking that so many people have, that Trump colluded with Russia and that's how he won the election.
Yeah, and the important part is, that the big takeaway is, for me, not the big, but one of the big takeaways for me is that, Putin did achieve at least part of what he wanted to achieve.
Sure.
And again, we've talked about it on the show a number of times. This is not necessarily aimed at destabilizing the United States, although that is part of it. I don't want to dismiss or downplay that, but it's more about stabilizing his grasp of power in Russia. So much of what is done here is done with the intended audience being the Russian people.
Right.
To show them how terrible the rest of the world is and how in disarray it is and how, you've got it much better here in Mother Russia. Just trust your dear leader, Vladimir Putin.
If you bought into the idea that Trump colluded with Russia, you're part of the problem. You helped contribute to Vladimir Putin's propaganda campaign in ways that he's probably sitting back laughing, going, "I worked out a heck of a lot better than I expected."
Right.
You get further into the story, the investigation does conclude. The Clinton campaign and the DNC, using a series of cutouts and intermediaries to obscure the roles, paid for opposition research on Trump, obtained by Russian sources, including a litany of claims by high-ranking current and former Russian government officials.
That they were more than happy to pass along.
The unfounded opposition research would be turned into the infamous Steele dossier, used to illegally acquire the FISA court warrant to spy on at least one former Trump campaign advisor. Most disturbing of all, the investigators found the President Obama's Director of Intelligence, James Clapper, provided inconsistent testimony about his contacts with the media, especially CNN, regarding his knowledge of the Steele dossier and his discussing it with CNN's Jake Tapper. If one follows the detailed timeline provided, it's now obvious that the American media wanted to report on the accusations against President Trump in the opposition research file, but it needed a news hook to hang their story on. And mic drop.
You know, and I'm even willing, I would be willing, let me put it that way, I would be willing to give the DNC the benefit of the doubt and say that maybe they didn't know that they were purchasing this information from Russian operatives. Perhaps this was unwitting collusion on their part. But the fact that they have pressed this narrative so hard, it feels like projection.
Right.
On their part. It feels like that classic sort of Alinsky-type technique of accuse your enemy of the things that you are guilty of.
As succinctly as possible, these are the facts. The Trump campaign never colluded with Moscow. However, Moscow inserted its lies into documents paid for by the other campaign during the presidential election. The propaganda was used to justify spying on Americans illegally, and serving director of U.S. intelligence helped to make Russia propaganda look real as he leaked the fact that it had been briefed in a newly elected president in the media company that would later hire him. To that end, Vladimir Putin, the former KGB colonel, with the help of James Clapper, Jim Comey, members of the media, and other Americans, achieved his goal to sow discord in American society and undermine our faith in the democratic process. I mean, it really is astonishing. And it's pretty clear that that's exactly what happened. And unfortunately, it still continues to happen to this day. We have a social media network now that perpetuates this.
Yeah.
And plenty of individuals who don't pay close enough attention, who just buy in to the headlines and don't bother to read any further, where a lot of these articles that are put out there, even by individuals that are biased of this president, they'll put that clickbait headline, but they'll put some level of truth in the story if you actually went and bothered to read it. But most of them know you're not going to go and do that.
Yeah, and plus it's what they want to believe anyway.
Right.
And that power, that force of something you want to believe, it takes a hammer to the head to drive something home if it contradicts and conflicts something you want to believe. And unfortunately, a report issued by the House Permanent Select Committee, because there's partisanship at play there, is easy for them to dismiss when it contradicts what they want to believe.
Switching gears, Tijuana, Mexico, nearly 200 Central American migrants attempted to seek asylum in the United States were stopped in their tracks when the border inspectors said that crossing the facility didn't have enough space to accommodate them. There's an interesting, by the way, clarity in the story that I appreciated. In an anticlimactic twist, about 50 asylum seekers were allowed past a gate controlled by Mexican officials to walk across a long bridge. I've been on that bridge a couple times, but were stopped at the entrance to the U.S. inspection facility at the other end. They were allowed to wait outside the building, technically still Mexican soil, without word of when U.S. officials would claim asylum. Now, again, this is that group of, it was like 500 or 600 individuals that were coming up as a caravan from Central America through Mexico that was dominating the headlines. We've now narrowed this down to 50.
It's not that big a caravan.
50, right?
Yeah. Such a stunt.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
Such a stunt.
The asylum seekers began the day with anticipation, traveling in red and white school buses under police escort. to a beachfront rally in Tijuana where a steel fence juts out into the Pacific Ocean. Photo op. They sang the Honduran national anthem and supporters on the San Diego side of the fence waved the Honduran flag. The truth of the matter when it comes to this is the San Ysidro Border Inspection Facility can hold about 300 people. This is according to Pete Flores, U.S. Customs and Border Protection in San Diego, suggesting the bottleneck might be short-lived. The agency processed. You ready for this? So you had this whole big story, right? Whole big story. Are they going to get asylum? What's going to happen? The agency processes 8,000 asylum cases, and they did that October through February, or about 50 a day. The point being, all those individuals could have come up on their own accord and just gone and sought asylum, and many of them probably would have gotten it.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they decided to make this big, huge show of the whole thing.
Right, right. Draw a bunch of attention to themselves, make it clear that this is more about, you know, drawing some controversy around the Trump administration,
right,
and less about their own individual asylum needs.
Yeah, the asylum seekers are typically held for about 3 days at the border, and then they're turned over to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. If they pass the asylum officer's initial screening, they may be detained or released into the U.S. and using ankle monitors. Asylum seekers didn't appear to be thrown off by the delay. Here's where I think the president did make a mistake. He should have been straightforward with this whole process and just said, you know, let them come and let our laws apply to them like they do everybody else.
Right.
End of story.
Right.
That would have been the best way to handle it. Unfortunately, this is a case, in my opinion, where President Donald Trump went and exacerbated this stunt. He bought what they were attempting to do hook, line, and sinker, and unfortunately helped to make this a much bigger story than it ever needed to be. And that's unfortunate. That's where I wish he'd just step back. Just don't even comment at all.
Well, that's one thing, you know, that's probably one of Trump's quote-unquote sort of fatal flaws, is he takes the bait. You know, when it's laid out there to him, he a lot of times, at least over Twitter, you know,
right.
I don't know that you can say that with actual policies that are, or anything that he's implemented so far, but he seems to have a difficult time not taking the bait, things that are laid out there for him. Like, you knew he was going to respond to the White House correspondence.
Oh, of course.
Dinner, and
of course.
He didn't have to.
No.
He could have just ignored it.
No. Sometimes it works. I mean, I think sometimes it works and it's beneficial. Sometimes it doesn't. In this case, you know, I don't know if any harm was done, but we all would have been better off without this particular story having dominated the headlines the way that it did.
The Vikings held a draft this weekend. That's actually inaccurate. That's a lie. The NFL held a draft this weekend. Phrased that really poorly. The Vikings took part in it. We participated in said draft. Voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, will join us next to break down all of the new players joining the Minnesota Vikings.
Justice.